You're listening to The Shepherd's Voice with Archbishop George J. Lucas, a podcast with the Archdiocese of Omaha. Today's conversation, Charlottesville, racism, and the Church's response.
USCCB President Cardinal Daniel DiNardo said that marches by hate groups such as the KKK and neo-Nazis are outrageous to the sensible mind and directly challenge the dignity of human life. It is time for us to recommit ourselves to eradicating racism. Now, he said this in the context of establishing an ad hoc committee against racism for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Archbishop, as you and I were speaking the other day, you said you want to make sure that we don't simply react in the moment, but that we offer something constructive in keeping with the gospel. So where do we begin? What do you think the root of this is?
Yeah, it's a very important question. And as you say, we don't just want to react to something that's going on. At the same time, it demands a response, I think, from disciples of Jesus. And mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more with Cardinal DiNardo that demonstrations, manifestations by hate groups such as the KKK and neo-Nazis really are outrageous. And they have no place in our society. And they really do touch on the issue of human life and dignity in a very important way. So the gospel has a response that again, it's not simply a reaction, but it's the response of the gospel through the ages. But it's important in this particular moment in our country that we sort of focus the truth of the gospel on this particular challenge.
So you grew up in St. Louis in the 50s and 60s, came of age.
I did. Yeah, I was born in 1949.
Great. That was a time of a lot of social change in a lot of different communities. What did you see in your community growing up?
And not long before I was born, actually, we had a new archbishop in St. Louis, late 1940s, Archbishop Ritter. And he took what was then considered a very bold step of integrating the Catholic schools. Mm-hmm. That up until that time, so all through the early part of the 20th century and before, were segregated. As I was growing up in the Catholic community there, that was seen as a point of pride that the Archbishop would have taken that step. And there was no small opposition to it at the time. So the fact was, when by the time I was in grade school, the Catholic schools were, in theory at least, integrated. And so it was possible and right for children of any race to be able to register in a Catholic school. As a point of experience, though, it was a very segregated community, and remains so today in many ways. So I have to say that really, growing up in St. Louis, I did not have the benefit where we lived of interaction with people of other races on a regular basis. Mm. As I look back now, I count that as a lack and as a loss for me, and I have appreciated the opportunities that I've had to have relationships and friendships with people of other races later in life, but that wasn't my experience when I was young. My parents, I have to say, were very respectful of all people and insisted that we would be too in our speech and in the way that we talked about or approached people. But in our neighborhood and in our parish, I would say there was a lot of really disrespectful talk about people of other races. In those days, particularly African-American people. So there's a benefit, I think, and I look now really with joy at a lot of the young people in this community and, you know, in other places in our archdiocese whose experience is much more diverse mm-hmm. than mine was. And I think that's it's a blessing for them, and it's an opportunity to recognize that within diversity there can be an exchange of gifts and a great benefit to all. So I didn't have that growing up, and there was sort of an undertone of racism, and you could hear it both in my own contemporaries, but also in adults, people using language that was disrespectful, terms that whether they were trying to be disrespectful or malicious then, I can't know. But I think looking at that now, we have to clearly say that's wrong.
Right.
and it was disrespectful. So I listened to people my own age of another race, African Americans, for example, or others who get to speak for themselves about their experience and know how hurtful that was and how they may have felt excluded mm-hmm. from situations or opportunities that I took for granted. That was the result of their race.
You mentioned students and schooling, and you have no lack of experience in the classroom. Did you find an opportunity? Were there basically ways that you found to present this issue, the scars of slavery, the problems we dealt with out of that? Especially teaching history, I was just wondering if that was something. That,
yeah, I taught history and government and current affairs, you might say. You know, mm-hmm. sort of looking at current issues in the light of history and the light of our governing principles. And I think I was able to teach that, and I think it's important for us to remember now that some people have called racism the original sin of our country, that it was enshrined in the Constitution. So when our country was constituted at the beginning, we made provision, or the founders made provision, for one group of people to own another group. The thought was that we could, in order to get the government up and going, we would make what the founders called a compromise. It wasn't a compromise if you were a slave, but it was, for them a compromise so that the country could be constituted and we could deal with it later. Mm-hmm. So that decision has made a difference in our country, and of course we saw it very clearly at the time of the Civil War. But also through Reconstruction, and really up until the present time, it's an evil in the fabric of our country, the fabric of our Constitution, even though the Constitution itself has been changed.
Right.
But the evil has gotten into to our society, into our culture, and we haven't been able to deal with it successfully. And so what we see recently in Charlottesville and what we experience in many places around the country these days, both in terms of rhetoric and also in terms of practice every day, is that racism is still an evident part of who we are as a culture.
How do you think that comes to be? I mean, obviously that's a huge question about people's upbringing, conditioning, and all that sort of thing. But I guess what I'm driving at is there something fundamental in the the fallenness of our humanity, or is this a peculiarly American thing?
I don't think it's a peculiarly American thing. What was peculiar here was that we allowed the institution of slavery to go on
right.
into relatively modern times. Mm-hmm. When other nations had seen that it was evil and put a stop to it. So we certainly weren't unique, but it was something that took us a lot longer to deal with, and we sort of dealt with it at the point of a gun, in terms of the institution. But we saw when I was growing up, the civil rights movement was very much a part of the life of our country, and really a very powerful social movement rooted in faith, rooted in scripture for the most part, for many who were leading that that movement, who understood, I think, in a way that most of the time we don't understand, that hearts need to be changed if there's going to be racial justice and respect in our society, as well as laws need to be changed. And so certainly we should never enshrine racism in law, and it's important that laws are changed so that opportunities are available legally for us on a level playing field, we might say.
Mm-hmm.
And what we observed in the time of the civil rights movement here was that many hearts were changed, but not all of them. And we see vestiges of racism, vestiges of the Ku Klux Klan, or reincarnations of it, perhaps, that show that there's still a strain within our culture that would see that as an acceptable and even good way of behaving, and the twisted way that people would look at it. I think this is the case, you know, not to make any excuses for it at all. I think at all we need to call evil evil. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it really is a manifestation of the original sin of Adam and Eve into which we are all born. So you rightly say that most kids don't grow up with a prejudice or a sense of an animus against people of another race. Often that's learned. I mean, we can see differences, but we don't see the differences as a negative necessarily. But when we think about and we read in the book of Genesis about the original sin, and we see its effects, the effects really have so much to do with division and separation. And so the effect of original sin was a separation of ourselves from God and ourselves from other people,
right?
And even separation within ourselves. St. Paul talks about that, you know, how we want to do one thing and we people do something else. And even a separation of us from the created world. So we're kind of even at odds with creation. And we see that in various ways. So it continues to be the work of the devil to tempt us to capitalize on the division or see that division is a good thing. And that we, that being at kind of set apart or at odds with somebody else is really how life is supposed to be. That's a lie. But it's
diabolical.
It's diabolical, but it's tempting.
Yeah.
And so we would think, well, you know, certainly after the Civil War, after the amendments to the Constitution, after the Civil Rights Movement, you know, we would all be in a much better place. But again, recent events show us that sadly we're not in many cases. And so I think we have to see again, it is diabolical. It's a temptation for us to think and act in a way that is against God's plan, against the dignity of other people, against even our own dignity, to speak in a way that demeans people of another race, or that we speak and act in a way that's meant to make other people fearful, or to experience that they're excluded from opportunities that should be available to everyone. So I guess, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that even in our time this is an issue. But we also shouldn't throw up our hands and say, well, I guess this is just the way we are. I guess this is what it means to be human, you know,
right.
that we the people of different races can't get along or be respectful. Because we see many examples around us, thankfully, of people who have made a genuine effort to get to know one another, to listen to each other's stories, to be respectful, even where there's disagreement or difference.
It's interesting that we mentioned the word respect. I mean, the word respect comes from looking again, right? We look a second time,
right,
at that other person, and not go away with our initial impression sort of solidified. Am I right there? I think that's one of the things to...
Yes, and we don't just accept somebody else's pat expression for another person that we...
Right.
Especially if it seems that it diminishes that mm-hmm. person or is disrespectful. But we look again
and
recognize the other as a brother or sister in the human family.
And I mean, among these temptations that you mentioned, I have heard that and seen it in these conversations in recent weeks about, you know, some people saying, are we still at this place where we're still dealing with this same stuff? I thought we were better. I thought, you know, it's disappointing. And then others going, like you said, just sort of shrugging. Yeah, well, there are always crazy people, or there are always people who do X or Y, sinful act. Well, true as well. But it seems that there's a particular space for a response that is more total, more whole. Harkening back to the civil rights movement, especially the letter from Birmingham Jail that I should provide a link to if we're going to reference it here, because he references two of our greatest saints. Martin Luther King appealed to the deep store of Christian understanding of the human person. That was the foundation for everything. From what I understand, that's the foundation on which everything was built. Everything that we're asking for in terms of justice is built on this Christian understanding. And in a sense, he was calling Southern Christians to conversion, to an understanding of that which Jesus actually brings. And that, I don't, do you see that happening today? Is that, where is that happening?
I mean, I think that's the responsibility of pastors. And I've, people have called on me since the events in Charlottesville to say something, you know, and I respect that. And I think it is my responsibility. It's the responsibility of others in the community too. But I think we in our Christian heritage, we do have something very important to say, besides just shut up and don't use hate speech.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, we should say that at a minimum. But that's, you know, just trying to stifle something. Maybe that may be important at a moment to do that. But it's going to be said somewhere else or in another way if there isn't also an invitation to conversion and to, again, to respect, to look again, to see things in a deeper way, to see the truth about other persons that's imprinted there by God and isn't something that's given by the Constitution or by me or you or a majority of people, but that people have right to this human respect because they're created by God. The founders of our country, the framers of the Constitution, had, I think, at least a general biblical sense of human dignity, and that's reflected in founding documents of our country, although their sense of it was certainly incomplete, and I think we have to say that now. I hope they would say it now, too, if they were still living. We don't know, but certainly there was a defective understanding of the complete family of humanity that's worthy of respect on an equal basis, and there are certain freedoms that are enshrined in the Constitution, the freedom of speech, for example, mm-hmm. But really all the freedoms and rights that are part of our constitutional democracy are predicated on the fact that the vast majority of people most of the time are going to try to be decent and right. respectful, and do have, again, this biblical sense of what it means to be human and what it means to deal respectfully with other members of the human family. It's not right for anyone to just sort of claim this right to free speech, that I can say anything, no matter how hateful or demeaning it is, how racially tinged it is, you know, about another person, because I've got the Constitution gives me the right, or I'm a citizen, you know, so I can say anything I want. We traditionally, in a civilized community, know that we ourselves need to place curbs on our freedoms and on the things that we say and do out of respect for ourselves and others, and we need respectfully to insist on that from our brothers and sisters. So I think it's, you know, the word, we can use the word hate too often and it can sort of lose its potency, but we are experiencing hate, mm-hmm. hateful speech, mm-hmm. and it's evil in itself, but it also will often incite other people who hear it to take action, you know, to do something more than be hateful in speech. And I think that's perhaps what we saw in Charlottesville.
Right. Yeah.
It seems to be the case. Somebody got riled up, and by, you know, by the hate speech that was being spoken.
That spilled over.
Against African Americans, against Jews, against others, and then decided he would, you know, take some violent action against other people. So the words have meaning, and they're meant, and I think particularly when they're shouted and called out in demonstrations, you know, in hateful ways, they're meant to stir people up. Mm-hmm. I think people we have to see that, and those who do that have to take responsibility for that. And so I think. You know, we can use the word hate speech too loosely, but I think we've seen it really in recent weeks, and we continue to hear it, particularly in a racially charged way. And as a just society, or a society who wishes to be just, I think we have to stand against it and isolate it, you know, to the extent that we can.
Sure, but yeah, so definitely, yeah, definitely there's a need for a creative response. That's one of the things that we talk about a lot here in the work that we do in the church and in our local communities of parishes and others that they're trying to face in these individual communities that are very diverse amongst themselves. how do we respond to the needs of the communities around us? And I can't help but think, like, as you mentioned, you have the opportunity now as our bishop to travel all around this region. Do you see, like, where do you see these sort of fault lines? We can often be blind to them. So as our shepherd, what do you see as the divisions that we're still working to address? And then how can we address, what can we do?
Sure. I think we have to be honest about the fact that we're still struggling with racial divisions, and that may have to do with ethnicity too in various ways. Mm-hmm. So there is not too far beneath the surface, but sometimes above the surface, of bias in many places against immigrants. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I heard recently one of our priests recount that someone in his parish saying, without, you know, necessarily sounding angry, but just sort of as a matter of fact, talking about a family of immigrants who were at their parish who really shouldn't be there because they've got their own parish they could go to. Well, I mean, you know, that's, when you think about it, it's an awful thing for, right. for any Catholic to say about somebody that comes to our parish, well, they really shouldn't be here. So whether that was a conscious act of racism,
sure.
or just a sort of a manifestation of where the person's heart really is, it's sad to hear that. It's sad as a pastor to hear it, but it's data. You know, it sort of shows us where we are. And I think that's probably not the only person who may have thought that. We've had very active African American Catholics in our archdiocese for generations, and I know they feel, because they've expressed it to me, that they sense that their presence, but also their contribution to Catholic life here, is often not acknowledged or even you know, seen or recognized by others. So again, that maybe not be conscious on anybody's part on a given day, but it's a reality, and I think it's it may be that those of us who are not part of the African American community see our brothers and sisters there as other, and just maybe not sharing our experience in some way. So in terms of our conversion of heart, and then the creative things, as you talked about, where we need to think about how can we come together to, first of all, know each other, and then after knowing each other, appreciate each other. I think we have some work to do there. I hope that is as part of our pastoral vision of one church and of creating a culture of unity in our archdiocese, that we can take some concrete steps in the years ahead. When we did listening sessions a couple of years ago around the archdiocese, sort of leading toward the pastoral vision, it was one of the things that came through clearly and in some ways surprised me by its intensity, that people notice divisions and want to get past that somehow, but maybe don't understand how they could do it. There's a sense often that we're living past one another.
Yeah.
So even if there is an active animosity towards or people from another nation or from another race, that our lives just don't intersect. And so what happens then practically is what's going on in my life isn't important to those brothers and sisters of mine, and sadly what's going on in their life might not be important to me simply because I don't know about it. I never see them. Pope Francis is encouraging in so many ways, but in this regard particularly, he really encourages us not to think of other people as groups, but to realize that whether we're thinking of immigrants or people of another race, that these are people with faces and names and stories, just as I have. Their story's different from mine, but it's equally valid. And so that our responsibility is to not just think about them, and, you know, am I going to be nice to them, or are we going to let them be part of this? But who are these people that I haven't had the chance to meet yet, and with whom Jesus is inviting me to share the joy of the gospel and to share my life in some way? And to believe that as my life becomes more involved respectfully in the life of someone who may be different from me in some way, that there's going to be an exchange of gifts, that I might have something to offer that woman or man, and that person might have something to offer. So I can say this. I've had the experience of when I was a priest in St. Louis, of living and serving in some integrated neighborhoods, so mm-hmm. which were white and African-American. And there were a few of those in the St. Louis area, mm-hmm. still, and there still are. And they were neighborhoods where people had learned to live together and to not run away from each other, from people of different races, that they lived next to one another. They were there for each other if there was something, some big need. I mean, they would drop everything and run to help their neighbor. Didn't matter what color the neighbor was. But there really was not a lot of social interaction. So it made I knew a lot of those folks personally, and some of them were parishioners. Not all of them were. But it made me realize how difficult this coming together people of different races can be, because those people that I observed seemed to all have goodwill and not be operating out of fear and or disrespect necessarily, but their lives didn't intersect much. So, you know, people have freedom of association, we know, and
sure.
You know, we make friends with the people that we do. So, I don't want it to sound like this is easy, and it, kind of back to what we were saying before, if we're easy, I think we'd be where we already where we should be.
Right.
In terms of changing our hearts and our understanding. Again, to repeat something from that I've already said, just the fact that this seems to really be a struggle through our lives, one generation to the next, doesn't mean that it's right, or that we just throw up our hands and say, well, we really can't do anything about it. But we continue to kind of pray, dig into the treasure of the scriptures and the treasure of our Catholic teaching, and find what's the Lord asking of us. Mm-hmm. At this moment, I think, you know, his heart desires unity, and not just all being thrown together somehow, but a unity that's really respectful, and where there is this exchange of gifts.
Yeah, so that we could say we for real.
Yeah,
and
another thing I would add, I think it's really important for us, and I speak as an older white man. I think it's important for me to. And invite others to important to listen to people who are hurt right now and who are afraid or who are feeling disrespected, and to not too quickly say, oh, you shouldn't worry about that, or that's not such a big deal. It's important that people speak for themselves, and when people are speaking from a place of hurt or pain, it's important that we listen to them and take that for what it is, you know. Otherwise, we really even unconsciously just sort of perpetuate a kind of racism or a kind of distance from the other in our own thinking. So I you know, you hear some people asking in different ways, you know, whether their lives matter, and you know, that's a question we should take personally. You know, does that person's life matter to me?
So reverence is the antidote to indifference.
And if someone's willing to share his or her experience, and they may be very upset as they're sharing, you know, and
right.
I would say people who are on the receiving end of some of this hateful and violent speech and behavior have a right to be upset. Just because they're upset doesn't mean that's a kind of hysteria. We should just dismiss that. I mean, I think we need to be... those of us who maybe don't feel that we're the object of racism at the moment should listen to those who may be having that experience, mm-hmm. and should again reverence that experience of theirs and be willing to be with them and that, to pray with them even from a distance, and to reflect on what they're saying they are experiencing without dismissing it.
I'm just thinking about that there's this... The admonition to love our neighbors is something we've heard so often, I think, that it is kind of part of the wallpaper. Mm-hmm. But to love your actual concrete neighbor, mm-hmm. isn't the easiest thing in the world. Chesterton said that our Lord commanded us to love our enemies and love our neighbors because often they're the same people.
Yeah.
And while in this case we're not saying that our neighbors are our enemies, but they are often the unknown, the other. So
yeah.
Praying for those opportunities to actually... live that charity, I think.
Yeah, exactly. When Jesus tells us to love our neighbors, first of all, in his way of presenting that to us, as we see in the parable of the Good Samaritan, who's the neighbor, is a pretty, there's an expansive answer to that. So, you know, we shouldn't think of that too narrowly. But you're right, the neighbors that are close to us, to love them in practical ways, that sometimes can be difficult. But our understanding of what he means and what the biblical notion of love of neighbor is means that, you know, that I think of them in a loving way and want good for them, and that I'm willing to go out of my way for the good of the other person. So it's not tolerance and in a bland way, or just you know, a celebration of diversity for its own sake, but it's a looking, as the Pope says, at the face and the story of the person, either close by or even someone far away, and praying, being willing to pray for that person, and really wanting good for the person to the extent that I would do something good myself, so that that they could experience the good.
Yep.
And I'm pretty far from that on many days, and I think most of us are. So that really is the struggle. We have heard that commandment of Jesus so often, and we think, yeah, fine. I love my neighbor. In other words, I'm not doing anybody any harm. But right. That's not enough, and that's not what Jesus meant. That's at a minimum where we should be when we get out of bed in the morning. I don't intend any harm to anybody. But if I really love my neighbor, that means there's a decision to give of myself somehow for others. And I think in many ways that's really what's being asked of us now in our country, and so often what, in my mind, is missing. Where we look across what seems to be a divide. The devil is at work tempting us to think that the divide is good, and that whoever's on whatever the divide is, whether it's racial or political, that person's bad and not worthy of my respect, and not deserving of whatever it is that I think I deserve on a given day. And so the invitation of Jesus is to love our brothers and sisters, and to do that in an active and an intentional way. And to do it in speech, and to do it in attitude, to do it in front of our kids, to do it in front of our colleagues at work, when either we have the opportunity to show respect or love for someone, or to be willing to stand up and challenge someone who's speaking or acting in a way that is demeaning to someone else. That's a tough commandment. And I think we see right at this moment in our nation how hard it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing sentimental about it.
Yeah, right.
No. Yeah, it seems so clear that there's no way around other than that conversion, right? Mm-hmm. Other than love, there's no other power or plan we can come up with that's going to change the heart of a person. Thank you for having this conversation. I think this is very helpful for me, so I hope it is for others as well. So just to close, what's your prayer for us on this point, at this time?
Yeah, I pray that we won't back away from what's clearly a challenge for us right now. And it's been a challenge in every generation. It's a challenge for us now. We easily, I'm afraid, as a society and as a country, just evolve into shouting matches. And that won't help in
right.
the long run.
Yeah.
So my prayer really is that our hearts can be warmed to the reflection of God in our brothers and sisters, and particularly in those who might at first glance seem so different from myself. Then I pray that we'll understand how to lead others to have warmer, bigger hearts that we might recognize what we have said and repeated since the beginning of our country, that we have this dignity and we have rights that are God-given, and that we want to preserve and enhance those, not just for ourselves, but for our neighbors.
Thank you for listening to The Shepherd's Voice. For more information, visit archomaha.org/podcast.